the San Luis Obispo County Planning Commission meeting to order. So with that, we'll start with the Pledge of Allegiance. Salute to the flag. Oh. Well, all right, roll call first.
That's what it says.
Order of operations. There's a piece of paper somewhere saying roll call first. So will the clerk call the roll, please?
Commissioner Christensen.
Here.
Commissioner Meltzer.
Here.
Commissioner White.
Here. Oh, White.
White.
Here.
Commissioner White. Chairperson White.
Here.
Chairperson White. Let it be known that.
Wow.
I know. Just get this one. Let it be known that Commissioner Christie is absent.
We'll get this straight, Ed. Thank you. With that, we'll do the salute to the flag. Okay, thank you. With that, we'll roll into public comment period. And so I have a couple requests to speak here. First from Eric Greening.
Good morning. I am Eric Greening. And those of you who are not new will remember how hard you worked on implementations for the smart growth policies. I guess now they're called strategic growth policies, but they were called smart growth policies. The idea, I think, is that when people give lip service to doing something and then do the opposite, it's less painful to have it be called non-strategic growth than to be called stupid growth. So we've moved from smart growth to strategic growth. Anyway, when you were working on them, they were the smart growth policies, and you were working on actually making them real by devising implementation strategies for them. And my understanding is that that package of implementation strategies is due to be discussed and possibly adopted by the Board of Supervisors on the 24th of this month. And the reason I'm bringing this up is that sometimes it's beneficial when something like that happens to have one or more members of your commission, particularly those who were actually there during the time when you were working on this, to answer questions and basically share what was on your minds when you were coming up with the language, proposed language that you did, and just to kind of help shepherd it through the process. So I just am hoping that at least one of you will be available for this, and that in other ways, all of you will make your interests and concerns known to the Board of Supervisors, and particularly to your respective appointing supervisor, and do everything you can to be a resource for the final decision makers on this process. I do believe that we can grow much more smartly and strategically than we have been doing up to date, and that the work you did last summer and fall does provide us with real progressive steps toward reaching that outcome. Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and good morning. We're going to lead off first with a very brief discussion of possible topics for an upcoming study session that your commission requested. Having
a brief overview of the Williamson Act program and the acreages and so forth in our county and how it impacts our county. And then the relationship between the restricted value and Proposition 13 value, and the implications for intergenerational transfer, which is a fairly significant issue with the ongoing administration of the program. And then the relationship between structures and land value, grazing land valuations, intensified crops such as vineyards, irrigated row crops, and then the farmland security zone, which has a different assessment value as well. Also of interest may be the current dollar amount of property tax reduction countywide, the subventions amounts and an overview of the state reduction and postponement of subvention payments from the state. I should say that we are expecting to receive subvention payments, but there has been a bit of history about how that's evolved, and you might like a little overview of that. Those were the ideas that I had, and I'm eager to hear new ones or additional ones that you might have.
Thank you, Mr. Waller. Input from commissioners on the suggested agenda topics for that workshop?
Yes.
Commissioner Melskow?
Are you going?
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Waller. I heard you mention irrigated crops, grapes, and so forth. How about orchards? You going to touch on that?
That's an excellent thing to add. Thank you.
Okay. Because I think that
certainly important.
That may be a little different than grapes, I believe. I may be wrong, but...
I believe so, but
yeah.
I'll rely on the assessor.
If you would, I'd appreciate it.
With that, so.
Thank you.
Good catch, Commissioner Melskow. Commissioner Wyatt?
Well, I think just sort of same. I think Mr. Weller's got it covered. I didn't bring my list today, but I will have it for the talk. But just that distinction of the valuation of between the different crops will be very helpful. How I think what you're saying you're going to do is talk about how that's made then, or how the calculation is done. That's what I was kind of curious about, and so I think that's just what you're talking about doing.
We'll be happy to work with the assessor and develop that information and present it to you and discuss. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Waller. Back to you, Mr. Hogg.
Thank you, Madam Chair. The next thing I wanted to note, and I believe there's a letter that's been put at your desk. If not, I'll tell you about it. I'll tell you about it anyway. We received a letter from former Commissioner Rose yesterday resigning from the Planning Commission's event subcommittee. And do you have the letter? Okay, so you can see his reasons for doing it. Basically, he doesn't think he's needed anymore, with Commissioner White having been appointed to the subcommittee, and the direction that the commission has given that will come back in a few meetings based on your direction. And then the next thing I wanted to mention is to remind you that a week from Friday, on the 20th, is the scheduled field trip to Los Osos to look at the wastewater project sites, treatment sites, collection system sites, pump stations. We've got an itinerary developed that I think has been shared with I think at least the commissioner from the district and the chair. And it looks like you have a question, Madam Chair.
Well, I haven't actually seen the draft itinerary. We were asked for, we were given a narrative of what it was going to include and were asked for input, but I haven't seen a blow-by-blow itinerary yet. I don't know if it's been developed.
I think we were going to pass out that
second
packet today.
Oh, great. Oh, okay. Well, having arrived a few minutes late this morning, I haven't had the opportunity to review it
yet. Well, we just
gave
it to you, so.
Okay, terrific.
There
was one request, I think it was from Commissioner Wyatt, to include the, was it the Gorby site, and that's been accommodated.
It is there.
Great.
However, I need to make sure you understand that the county does not have permission from the landowner to enter the site. So you will be seeing it from the public road.
Okay. Request permission to enter the site has been requested and denied, or we
Correct.
Just haven't gotten permission yet?
The former.
Okay.
That's what I've been given to understand.
Okay.
Is the landowner does not wish to have the county enter the site.
Okay. So, well, we can do a drive-by.
But I understand you can pretty much see it from the road.
Great. And has planning staff been coordinating with Ag Commissioner staff so that they can have a representative on the
You know, that's
site?
A good question, and I'll write it down and make sure that we dot that I.
Okay.
I honestly don't know if we thought of that.
I sent an email
to Ms. Brown.
But
now we have time to catch it.
Great.
What I wanted to say was we are meeting at the entrance to this building at 1 o'clock. I was just informed yesterday, I don't have the details, but I was just informed yesterday that the final EIR will not be ready in time for that. And staff is anticipating that we'll reschedule that study session for the July 6th meeting, which would have been the first hearing. And at this point, it's something I'll discuss with the chair when we get a moment. I would anticipate that we'd go back to our regular daytime meeting on May 14th. We have other business items, and we have enough lead time that we can put some more business items on, move a few things up. And then on July 6th, which is a Monday meeting, we would do the afternoon evening. We have plenty of time to work that out, but I just wanted to give you a heads up so that you could arrange your calendars.
Thank you for that. And I apologize, Mr. Hoke, I was distracted with this agenda. Was it the San Miguel final EIR that you said wouldn't be done?
Correct.
That we're talking about shifting?
Yes.
And
so San Miguel Ranch.
Would San Miguel Ranch, right. And so would we allocate the whole time on 6th July meeting for that then, or just part of it along with?
The plan was never to devote the whole day to it. The plan was to have other business items in the afternoon, take a dinner break, and then come back sometime after 5 and start the study session so that the public that lives in the North County could attend after work. That was the plan that we've discussed with the chair.
Obviously, all the San Miguel Ranch hearings won't be in the evening, but we wanted the first introductory meeting to have maximum public participation opportunities, so appreciate that accommodation.
And then, as you all know, because we reminded you several times to bring your sack lunch with you, we're going to have the study session on the housing element, then you're going to break, and then at 11 o'clock you'll reconvene for your Planning Commission retreat upstairs in this building in room 271. It'll be necessary at the conclusion of the retreat to then adjourn your meeting to March 20th for the field trip to Los Osos. We'll remind you again. I just wanted to plant that thought.
Is our retreat going to be televised, Mr.
No.
Hogue?
Okay. There's no facilities for doing that.
But
upstairs.
It is open to the public.
It is open to the public. It's not a big room. It supposedly holds 35, but there's less than 35 of us here right now.
Right.
And we will have chairs available for the public, and they will be able to watch the commission retreat.
Great.
So.
Does that conclude the update?
That's it.
I do have one question. I know that the board heard a Planning Commission appeal on Tuesday. I think that was the new board's first appeal from this Planning Commission, if I'm not mistaken. The Cayucas vacation
rental? The Sullivan
rental?
Vacation rental appeal.
Can you just maybe give the commission a brief?
Extremely brief, because I wasn't directly involved, but I do know that they denied the appeal.
Yeah, and I believe it was unanimous as well.
Okay. That's correct. I was there.
Thank you. I think it's helpful when we get a little update on how Planning Commission appeals fare at the board. I think that's
and there is another item of interest that occurred Tuesday as well, and that's the board did authorize amendments to the TDC program. And so that will begin the process. Again, I wasn't directly involved, and I can't give you the details, but if you need more information, Karen Nall can be contacted. Karen
Those
Nall
will be coming to the commission.
Yes. When they go through the whole process, there will be public hearings before your commission before they go on to the board.
Commissioner White, did you have a comment?
I had one question on the Cayucas vacation rental appeal. Was the commission's decision, the previous planning commission's decision, upheld by the board?
Yes, it was.
Okay, thank you.
I'm sorry, I've left that detail out.
I didn't know who applied for the appeal.
I did receive one request to speak form for planning staff updates, and that's Mr. Eric Greening.
Thank you. I am Eric Greening, and again, I just, for the sake of the listening audience and all of us in this room, my understanding then is that your field trip meeting for the Los Osos Wastewater Project sites is next Friday, the 20th, beginning at 1 o'clock out by the flagpole, and that there are seats on the bus for people who do not drive or have access to a car, but that they are limited. So my first question is, how does one reserve such a seat? Is there a process to go through? And then I presume at the end of the field trip, instead of everybody just going their separate ways in Los Osos, the bus would come back downtown at a certain time so that you could reconnect with the transit system. So if you could clarify that, then relative to the plans for July 6th, has any thought been given, since we're at some concern tomorrow? But
right.
Yes.
A week from tomorrow.
A week from tomorrow.
Right.
Mr. Greening, I'll just address your question on that, who to contact for that. I'll just address directly. Carrie Brown is organizing that field trip, and I have her phone number if you'd like it. Others of the public who are interested could call her, I'm sure, to see what this availability on the bus is. 781-5713.
And I'd like to point out that I think Mr. Greening's use of the word bus was maybe a little bit of an overstatement. I don't think we have a bus for the field trip. We've got a van or
it's a 22-passenger vehicle.
Okay.
Whether that's a van or a bus, I don't know if I know
okay.
where the dividing line is.
Okay.
But the point is that most of the seats are taken up with commission and staff.
Right.
There's only a handful of extra seats. The sooner you contact Ms. Brown, the better.
Yeah, I didn't want the public to think we had an enormous vehicle with lots of seats that would be available. Yeah. And
no. There's probably, by our informal count, about 5 or 6.
Okay.
And I don't know if there's other people that have... You know, the only fair way to do this is first come, first serve.
First
so,
serve.
Eric, if I were you during the break, I'd go call Carrie. Since you don't have many other options.
Yeah. And then I'd
like someone's cell phone, Eric, and call Carrie.
And then to answer his second question is the bus will return here.
Yes.
So then you can use the transit center from there.
And I'll just go ahead and respond briefly to Mr. Greening's suggestion that we find a North County venue for the San Miguel Ranch. The biggest impediment to that, as I understand it, is we now basically become a slave to our own technology. And we've got our webcasting and video equipment here in this room, which doesn't travel easily or well. And so we've sort of traded off our mobility, our public access mobility, for our public access electronic and web streaming capabilities. And so I think the general concept at this point is that moving commission meetings from out of this room basically has become a less and less viable option. But I do know that San Miguel is a very neighborly community, and they do keep in touch with each other, and I'm sure that there'll be lots of carpool opportunities and a serious move to reduce their carbon footprint in getting down here to participate in the hearing. So with that, if that is the end of planning staff updates, I think we're going to go on to our first item of commission business, which is the housing element update study session.
Thank you, Chairman Christie and members of the commission. I'm Chuck Stevenson, division manager for Long Range Planning Unit, and Morgan Terrell will be giving the presentation in just a moment, but I thought I'd provide a few comments to you relative to this. The housing element, we're first of all very pleased to be able to present our housing element. We're actually ahead of schedule, so we're pleased about that. And it's been our custom when we do release a public review draft that we come to the Planning Commission to acquaint you with the plan, acquaint you with some of the background that's gone into its preparation, and help you to sort of zero in on some of the key issues and features of the plan so that as you begin your study and reading of the plan, you might have a little better equipped to go into that review. So it's not our really intent to go into, this is not a hearing today, it's just simply an overview, again, acquainting you with the plan and its contents and some of the issues that we're dealing with. Your first actual hearing on this will be July 6th, and we've allocated 2 hours for that day. We've got several other meeting times allocated after that, and Morgan will go into a little more detail on the schedule, but I just thought I'd let you know. This is a public review draft. It'll be out for public review and comment. It will then change into a public hearing draft, which is what you will see. So we'll be receiving comments from the public and from HCD and so forth. So this will evolve over the next couple months. I just thought I'd provide that bit of explanation to you. So I think we're ready to go ahead, and I'll first of all mention that Morgan Terrell is the project planner and has done a really excellent job in organizing this and doing tremendous amount of background work on this project, so we're pleased to have her on our staff as well. So anyway, I'll turn it over to Morgan, and Dana Lilly, her supervisor, is also here, who will provide comments as well. So.
Thank you, Chuck. Good morning, Chairperson Christie and members of the Commission. As Chuck mentioned, this is a study session to help guide you in reading the public review draft of the housing element. The draft was released just this week, and the public has 60 days to comment, and the public can comment on change for homes from approximately 47,000 to 370,000, and the salary required for a four-person household would be about $20,000 to $107,000 a year in order to afford these homes. County staff met with a variety of community groups to gather information about housing needs over the next 5 years. For example, staff met with advisory councils, growers, home builders, the Housing Trust Fund, Area Agency on Aging. So it was a wide variety of groups, and I'll briefly describe the needs later on that were identified in these public meetings. And that was chapter one, just briefly, that describes the introduction. Chapter two is an evaluation of the previous housing element, basically describes how the county did with the number of units produced. For example, 43% of very low and low income housing was produced of the total goal identified in the regional housing needs plan, and 45% of the moderate income goal was identified, and more than 100% was met for above moderate. It also describes how many units and how the county did compared to the programs that we proposed, and that's in an appendix in the housing element. The state of California allocates a certain number of housing units that each county must plan for, and that number is 4,885 countywide. And then the San Luis Obispo Council of Governments creates a methodology committee that further breaks these units down by cities and the county. The methodology committee allocated 1,295 units to the unincorporated county. That's the number of units the county must plan for over the next 5 years at a minimum, and that's based on jobs and population. You can see that about 39% of the total is for very low and low income housing units. The county can count units constructed, under construction, or planned as of January 1st, 2007 towards meeting our regional housing needs plan allocation. You can see there's approximately 321 units that the county's identified throughout the county that include secondary dwelling, farm support quarters, and affordable housing units developed that are deed restricted towards that allocation. So that leaves approximately 193 units at a minimum that the county must plan for very low and low income housing units. Sites for very low and low income identified must accommodate 20 units an acre, so that's our residential multifamily land use category. And sites for moderate income must accommodate 10 to 15 units an acre. Again, we identified residential multifamily sites, although they don't have to accommodate 20 units an acre at a minimum, like the very low and low income sites. The county identified approximately 501 units for lower income housing. That's throughout the county. That includes secondary dwellings, farm support quarters. And so staff believes that this is enough to meet the required 514 units for very low and low income. And we also identified 677 moderate income units, which is above the minimum requirement. So county staff believes overall that we've met the required sites analysis to plan for 1,295 units. However, the state must agree with all of our assumptions. They were sent to draft, and they have 60 days to comment on our methodology and provide questions about how we identified the sites.
Ms. Terrell, can I ask for a clarification
Yes.
on that slide? It's under the chapter of sites analysis, but it's referring to units. So are these actual built units, 501 built units identified, or potential zoning appropriate for future build out of 501 units?
Thank you. Yes, the 501 units identified are sites that are zoned. They are not built yet.
Okay.
And then let me go back real quickly to show you. So the 1,295 units, those are either vacant sites already zoned for housing, or they can be sites, and they can be sites identified that were constructed after January 1st, 2007. So that's what this slide. So these 321 units, these comprise of units that were already built or under construction. So
it's a mix.
Yes, it's a mix. But that 501 are vacant sites already zoned residential multifamily. It's not rezoned land or already built units.
I've got a quick question. Excuse me. The split up of the county and the incorporated cities, is that done by SLOCOG or is that done by the state?
Yeah, that's done by SLOCOG. So the state just allocates the county.
So whether they agree with our assumptions is critical for approval by them of our housing element. But I think Morgan is telling you the staff is pretty confident that they probably will agree, but we'll find out within 60 days.
I do have one question. There was an earlier slide that basically demonstrated that in your analysis of, I guess, the previous 5 years, we were a little more than 50% under our targets for moderate and below moderate housing, and that we were at 142% of our targets for above moderate. So we're sort of building more expensive housing than we need and not enough affordable housing. So my question is that overbuilt number, the 42% overbuilt, are we going to be able to apply that sort of as a credit against zoning and unit capacity for the next 5 years?
No, we can't carry any credits over to the next housing element cycle. It's basically a blank slate. So any vacant sites we can count towards our sites analysis, again, to identify the needs, but we can't carry any extra building units constructed over.
So are we being penalized in any way for not meeting our targets for our moderate and below moderate income?
We're not penalized at all. It's basically just a blank slate again, where they give you a new need that you have to identify enough sites for. Basically, they just want to make sure that jurisdictions are providing the sites available to meet the need, but they don't enforce constructing the unit.
There is a scenario under which some jurisdictions are penalized, and the state, right in state law, recognizes that it's not within the power of the jurisdiction to make these affordable units happen, but that we should plan for them. In a sense, we're not preventing them from happening. But if the state approves a housing element based on a promise to rezone land, and that land is not rezoned, then you do have to carry that over to plan for in the next period, but we're not in that position.
Okay.
So, one question, thank you. So the way I understand it, the new requirements are adjusted to compensate for the deficiencies of the previous period?
Not really.
They're
just a forecast of growth in households and then housing needed for them.
So it's done strictly on a new analysis. It's not?
Yes.
Okay, thank you.
Any other questions on this chapter? Okay.
We'll go on to Chapter 4. This is goals, objectives, policies, and programs. And the goal is to achieve an adequate supply of safe and decent housing affordable to all residents of the county. And this is important because the National Association of Home Builders noted that only 20.7% of homes are affordable to median income households, and the ability to retain and recruit employees is difficult because of the price of homes here. So we felt this goal sort of is overarching and meets or identifies the need. I'm going to talk about quantified objectives. These are separate objectives from the Regional Housing Needs Plan. The state requires jurisdictions to have quantified objectives based on realistic development potential, basically how many units the county thinks could actually be built. And we believe 2,200 new housing units could be built, and this is because of the market. Obviously, the number of building permits issued is much lower, so it's lower than the last housing element cycle. And we believe about 40 rehabilitated units will be, these homeowners will be provided grant funding, and then 2,380 preserve units. This is such as mobile home parks from creating a zone for mobile home parks. Those programs such as those will preserve those units. So again, I know that there's confusion sometimes, but so these are completely separate goals, and these are in Chapter 4 and Chapter 3 identified as the Regional Housing Needs Plan goals.
And to kind of emphasize that distinction, the state does not require that your quantified objectives be based on your regional housing needs. They're really two separate exercises, and it is common that people get them confused. So once we've shown we have enough land at the proper densities to meet our regional housing needs, we're essentially showing the state we're not preventing that much housing from happening, but then our quantified objectives are what we think will really possibly happen. And they don't have to be the same.
But there's obviously a connection between the two.
There is a connection, and in an ideal world, they would be the same. And in this case, the staff is telling you, we don't think as much housing as even is in our regional housing needs share will occur, even as a result of all the programs we're proposing.
And the quantified objective?
No, I don't think so.
Okay. I mean, I'm just a little concerned when you're saying our goals and objectives aren't linked with our inventory.
In fact, since the goal is, the objectives is 2,200 housing units and our share is only 1,295, I kind of described that. We actually think more housing will occur because the zoning is already there and the lots are already there than the base minimum of our regional housing needs. And we are proposing to proactively, through the programs, have the percentages by income group be similar to the regional housing needs plan. So we think if we have that much housing growth, the same percentages ought to be affordable as are broken down in the regional housing needs plan.
Okay.
And I would just add as well that the programs are intended to, in some cases, provide incentives and to look creatively at streamlining and doing other measures that will help facilitate more housing. And this is something, as you're reading through the programs, if you feel like there needs to be additional programs or more specificity, that may be something you'd want to comment on as you read through it.
Okay. Yeah, that's a good point. So as you read through the element, you'll see there's three objectives and then several policies and programs that implement the goal. The programs are basically to encourage and facilitate development of affordable housing. The programs are quantified and cumulative, so they add up to the objectives. And basically, I know that you just received the public review draft. We ask that you read through all the programs in the context of the policies and the objectives just to kind of see how they work together as a whole. And the first objective addresses development of the 2,200 housing units starting August 31st, 2009. That's the start of the new cycle. It's 5 years. And to implement strategic growth when planning and reviewing new projects. There are 17 programs related to Objective 1, and I provided a handout. I think they were passed around. This is straight from the housing elements, Table 4.3. There's sort of some buzzwords of the program, so you can see real quickly what the program is, the time frame, priorities, funding.
They're just getting passed.
Okay.
Just getting passed out now.
And so you can kind of see they're labeled 1.A through 1.Q. That's related to Objective 1. And Objective 2 is to conserve, maintain, and improve 2,420 existing units. That's largely mobile homes. There's four programs that relate to this objective. You can see that's 2.A through 2.D on the chart. And the third objective addresses homeless persons by providing opportunities to construct and preserve homeless housing for homeless through shelters, and this could also be transitional housing and supportive housing. Are there any questions on Chapter 4 before we move on?
I don't see any.
Okay.
Well, I'm just looking at, you do have, the categories aren't quite aligned. I'm just looking at the chart on 4.2. You do have an extremely low category.
Is that what you mean for homeless? Would that be kind of homeless transitional stuff, or is that just general income below? Because I see an extremely low. I always have a hard time getting a handle on these categories.
Oh.
There's an extremely low, a very low, and a low.
Yeah. So
versus a very low, a low, and on another page.
Yeah. So the state requires jurisdictions to plan for very low, low, and moderate income housing. The county also adopted extremely low and workforce categories. And the state does require now for the county to identify the projected need of extremely low-income households, but it's not part of the regional housing needs plan allocation. So that's the confusion. It's not in all places. But we do have a goal for extremely low-income households because we have that affordability category, and we are supposed to plan for extremely low-income households.
Okay. And will that meld then with the homeless services, or is that still kind of a separate need from the homeless transitional supportive stuff?
You know, that's included with the for homeless and disabled persons because many of their incomes might fit into the extremely low income category. So
that would pretty much be the same.
Yeah.
Okay, thanks.
Mm-hmm. And Chapter 5 is housing needs assessment. It's basically an assessment of needs for the next 5 years based on trends that we researched and meeting with community groups. The programs in Chapter 4 are largely driven from Chapter 5, the housing needs assessment, although just for ease of reading, because Chapter 5 is pretty long, we did put Chapter 4 before Chapter 5. So I just wanted to make that clarification. And probably near services like shopping, medical services, those types of services. And in order to keep our economy healthy, we need to keep our workers, and that was identified that we need more housing to target the workforce households. The housing needs assessment also includes trend data, demographic and employment trends, constraints to constructing housing. These are both governmental constraints and non-governmental constraints. And special needs housing, like what are the needs of homeless, farm workers, elderly, single-parent households. Of data. And then I'll talk real quickly about the timeline. The public review draft was just released this week. There's a 60-day comment period, which ends May 11th. There will be workshops in April and May. I have two scheduled so far. They are listed on our website. There's a South County one on April 29th, a San Luis Obispo one, I think it's April 22nd. Again, this is posted on our website. And then we will schedule a North County workshop also. Our first hearing is July 6th, and then we have a Board of Supervisors hearing scheduled for August 25th to meet our deadline by the state for adoption, which is August 31st.
And if I could mention some dates that we have tentatively reserved before your commission. She mentioned July 6th. We've penciled in 2 hours on that day, and then July 23rd, another 2 hours. We're hoping that we'll be wrapping it up, but if not, we might be able to add it to the agenda for July 30th and still meet the state deadline.
And also, a copy of the housing element draft, the public review draft, is available on our website. So anybody listening now, you can go to slowplanning.org, and you'll notice right in the what's new in the middle of that web page, there's a spot for the housing element. So,
and also, although there isn't a lot of public here right now in the room, we do have a copy over here if the public wanted to read through it. It was bound improperly, so it's kind of reversed order, but the information's all there.
And there's also copies available for purchase, CDs and hard copies at the Planning and Building Department if you don't have web access. And this sort of concludes my presentation. Staff wants to know if we've identified the needs or if you've identified any needs that we've missed in the last few days, and if not, we have 60 days to continue providing comments on this draft.
I've got one question on the agriculture seasonal farm worker program. You in parentheses say H2A. Is that the new one that they've been working on, or is that the old program that's existed for many years? Do you know?
We think it's the one that's been operating for several years, but the growers we talked to thought there might be a lot more interest in that in the near future as electronic verification of the legal status of their workers kicks in. And they think that some growers may elect to pool resources and have a few growers provide housing and transportation and food, which is required by the program, so that that region might have a dependable labor source.
Well, I know there's been some work on revising the original program, and I don't know if that's finished yet or not in Congress. You might just look and see what's the latest program and make sure you got the right H2 whatever on there. I was just curious. I'm not sure what it should be.
Any other questions or comments? Commissioner Wood?
I just received, thank you. I just received the draft of the housing element a couple days ago and just briefed through it. I haven't read it thoroughly. I know it's a draft, but I assume you'll be proofreading for slight errors?
Yes.
Okay, great. It may not be an error. I just had a clarification question on page 3-15 in the site analysis section. We're identifying APNs for potential sites that have available infrastructure. Okay. And in Los Osos, there's three APNs listed, and one's the 024 number at the end is listed twice. And I didn't know if there are three separate parcels or if it's supposed to be like 024, 025, and 026, maybe.
We'll check on that. Thank you.
Okay, thanks. Thank you.
I also haven't had a chance to read the element closely, but we'll all be digging into it between now and July 6th. One thing did catch my eye on the staff report, however, on page 15 under programs proposed for deletion, and that's number 1.5, which says revised mixed-use standards to encourage additional dwellings. And the reason given for that is that staff reviewed the ordinances and enough flexibility was found in the standards. Those two statements are
completely different, but a different public hearing draft in July.
Yeah,
so
that's right. We'll incorporate public review comments and comments by the state, and then you'll receive the revised draft.
And it'll probably be bound correctly and that kind of stuff. Okay. Yeah. All right. Thank you.
Okay. I do have two.
I did have a couple more questions for you. Yeah. looking through the programs, thank you for this. It's nice to see the format of this, the layout with the handy sidebars and the pictures of the projects that work. And I also liked having the graphics of the house plans that are available for the secondary dwellings. So looks nice on this. A couple of policy questions. Just on 416 talks about mini storage in RMF zones. That's something that's come up a few times, and I know this isn't the hearing yet, but it just talks about maybe nixing mini storage in certain on certain RMF zoned parcels. I thought we kind of talked about maybe deleting that in general as an allowed use in the RMF zone. So I don't know if we want to get into these kind of policies now or hold off. But it was my intent to think about deleting that completely. I thought that's what we heard at least several commissioners say.
Yeah, I think that's the intention here, too. If we require attached housing, then mini storage would be prohibited in those selected areas.
Okay, but it seems to, I'm flipping to the page, it seems to suggest just disallowing that on a few selected sites.
You're speaking to all RMF zones?
Yeah. Yeah, I thought that was more of the intent. That was certainly mine.
That's my recollection as well.
So I guess I would want to lead us or hope we would be going in more of that direction of a general deletion of that as an allowed use rather than an occasional deletion. And then on 424 regarding the mobile home park zones, something we've been talking about a bit, and I was just curious, I guess there's not
too much description of that here, so I was looking for a little more update on that. I see program AG2B, create the land use category, is there. And I guess I was just looking. Probably more information doesn't need to be there because it's coming, scheduled soon. Yeah, and so that's why my question, I guess, because it is scheduled for 2009 this year. So I was just curious where that's, how that's coming.
Well, the short version is it's taken us a lot more staff time getting inclusionary in our mobile home park conversion ordinances running. In fact, that's why we were at the board this week to get authorization to do some cleanup changes to the inclusionary housing ordinance. So we have not been able to allocate a lot of staff time to that yet, but that staff time is now getting allocated to it because those programs are now going forward.
Okay. So that's, so you are just starting to think about,
yes,
how you're going to do that. Okay. I was hoping for something. And Jean asked about farm worker. I wasn't too clear on those policies, but sound like with Jean's question, you'll be doing a little more research on that farm worker housing.
Yes.
The other questions I had regarding mobile homes, it says, I think 317, that manufactured homes are allowed in all residential categories now? I thought they weren't.
They have been.
They have
for
been.
Quite a long time.
Oh, okay. So they are currently allowed on in,
sure,
any site?
Any
urbanish areas?
Oh, yeah, in urban areas, anywhere a normal, conventionally built home is allowed, manufactured housing is allowed also.
Oh, okay.
Some of the older mobile homes are subject to some additional standards in the urban areas, but there's getting to be fewer and fewer of those out there anyway.
Okay, all right. Yeah, I was just surprised to see that. I didn't think they were actually
mm-hmm.
allowed, so.
We don't see too many, but they are allowed, and like Dana said, there are some standards. They're required to have eaves and a roof pitch and some other design standards, but they're allowed in any category where a conventionally built house is allowed.
Okay. Well, that was news to me. The other, I just wanted to bring up the other question. SROs are mentioned here. I'm glad to see, and didn't mark the page, but so they're allowed in all RMF zones now? Or RMF lots, or I was
yes.
curious for a little more discussion on them because I think they could be a way to go.
Single room occupancy residential developments would fall under the category of multifamily housing under our zoning ordinance, and so they are allowed in that zone. Well,
it's page 411, program 1.G is where it's mentioned.
So we do want to take
the county, you wouldn't see as much as the city urban area would.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Any additional questions, Commissioner Wyatt?
No, that's the list. You will pass on a few general sort of format comments,
okay,
and may be helpful or to get into the next draft.
Yeah, we've all got 60 days to be in contact with staff about any revisions we'd like to see in the public hearing draft, so we can get more specific in those kinds of communications. I have two speaker slips this morning, and first we're going to hear from Hugh Gilson, followed by Eric Greening. Welcome, Mr. Gilson. You have 3 minutes.
Chairperson Christie, commission members, good morning. I'm Hugh Gilson. I'm here representing the California Mobile Home Resource and Action Association. I passed out a copy for each of you of some suggested language for adapting California Government Code 65590 to the inland zone. We believe that because this wording mirrors the Coastal Act law in that it contains the same options and exceptions and would apply to all types of projects, it is legally viable. Further, when you consider the amount of affordable housing units that were actually built during the previous cycle, it would appear that the county could use an additional tool to facilitate the conservation of existing affordable housing units. Now, although staff has opted not to recommend any affordable housing replacement requirement for the inland zone, we see no difference between the loss of affordable housing units in one zone or the other, and therefore would urge you to consider including this regulation in the current housing element update. Thank you.
Mr. Gilson, before you leave the podium, you've just handed out essentially three pages of code revision followed preceded by a cover letter, which obviously we haven't had a chance to read. It looks like there's some pretty specific recommendations in it. Can you just outline for us what it is you're seeking to accomplish?
Basically, the Coastal Act law, which requires a one-for-one replacement of any units of affordable housing as defined, and as low or moderate income, to transfer that into the inland zone. It's directed not towards any specific type of project, but any type of project as outlined there. The wording we put together follows the Coastal Act law as exactly as we could do it. We took the direction from a planning commission hearing from last year, a couple of them, and what Mr. McNulty had opined about the legality of the way the one-for-one application was used there. And apparently too narrowly restricted into only mobile home park conversion ordinance was not legally defensible. And although there was a great deal of confusion, we spoke to Mr. McNulty last month concerning this, and my understanding is that he was working on an opinion for one of the Board of Supervisors, and I haven't heard the results of that yet.
So this would be a more broad requirement that would say generally, if anyone is seeking approval for the demolition or conversion of an affordable unit of any type, whether it's a mobile home or a rental unit or whatever, that as part of that project approval, they would have to replace the same number of units that are being demolished or converted.
Or meet other affordable requirements as are outlined in Title 23. They came up just recently in a mobile home park conversion to resident ownership where there are other ways. In-lieu payments is one that's listed in the Coastal Act itself. But in Title 23, they also talk about establishing long-term affordability in certain units and so on. There are a number of other options. This is only suggested language. We're not trying to write law here. We're just trying to, we think that considering the amount of affordable housing that actually is getting built, to lose existing affordable housing would be...
town if they could, and not living on a farm, certainly with their families, certainly not in a dormitory. So farm workers are not all alike anymore. Policy HE 1.5, identify and eliminate or reduce regulatory barriers to development of housing affordable to all income levels. That makes me nervous. It sounds as if all includes even above moderate, and that we're just trying to bulldoze regulatory barriers, whatever those are, out of the way. Number one, do we want to say very low, low, and moderate rather than all? And number two, do we want to say something like redundant or obsolete regulatory barriers? Because some regulations exist for good reasons. We don't want to stick any kind of housing in places where the water supply is not adequate, et cetera, et cetera. And certainly CEQA still, except where it's already been identified, then maybe you can skim over some of the CEQA in terms of a later stage of implementation, but don't see environmental review necessarily as a barrier. HE 1.13, sentence 2, infrastructure, it lists things, and I think with roads it would be good to list trails, sidewalks, bicycle lanes, and transit, just so that we're recognizing smart growth as part of the picture and not just roads. And then I don't know if this goes to HE3A or where, but I am hoping that we don't count shelter beds as a very low income units as if they were housing, because they're not. I've known other jurisdictions where they are so far below their targets in terms of very low income that they count shelter beds just to make it look like they're partway there. But a shelter is not a home. Sometimes people don't even know if they'll be let in the next night. It's like night to night to night trying to get back in, and it certainly is not home, even though the people who work in those places are often doing the best they can to make it home-like. So anyway, those are some of my concerns, and a lot of good work on this. Overall, I think it's going to move us in a very good direction. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Greening. We certainly don't want to build affordable housing in wetlands. I don't think that's the intent of the program language there. Any response from staff or further comments or questions from commissioners? Okay.
Sure.
Thank you very much. I'm sure we'll all be in touch about this, and we'll see the updated draft on July 6th. Mr. Hogue is not in the room. Are you filling in for him, Mr. Stevenson?
I guess I am. I did want to just mention, though, you will be receiving your public hearing draft, I believe, in, help me on the date on that. So this public review draft will morph into the public hearing draft, and you'll receive that in plenty of time before your hearing. You won't receive it at your hearing.
60 days plus production time, basically. Our agenda states that we're going to adjourn to room 271 at 11. But in my discussions with Mr. Hogue prior to the agenda coming out, we had agreed that we were going to simply go into the retreat mode when our public business items had concluded. So that's my inclination, is to maybe take a break and then reconvene in 271 and not wait until 11 o'clock. I don't know if there's an issue with that, but I know that's what we had publicly discussed.
We get the room after 10.
Okay.
Somebody else has the room.
So it's almost 10 now, so you could take a break, maybe take an extended break for 20 minutes or so.
Great. Yes, since we are going to have a working lunch, then I suggest that we'll take, say, a 20-minute break. Will that give you enough time, Ellie? Do you want us to take 25?
Because we have to let the other people get out of the room.
Right.
And then we need to set up our...
Okay. Let's give you 25.
Yeah.
Okay? That way we won't rush you. And for members of the public who are listening, who would like to join us for all or part of our retreat, which is open to the public and the public is welcome, we will be reconvening in room 271 at 10:25, and that is in this building on the second floor. Okay, we'll see you all there.
Could we take all the documents into the room? Let's do it. Okay. Or should we do it at the end of the day?
We'll do it again.
Yeah. You better wait.